Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, your destination for all things lacrosse. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Across the table, as usual, the man, Mr. Jack Piattelli. How are we doing?
Doing really well. I tell you, really excited to come in today. You know why?
What?
We have a special person in the building.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
We have a beautiful lady. Her name is Danielle Parisi. And she's a very, very beautiful woman, very talented, and she owns the Three Chestnuts creative team, and she's doing some work for me, and yes. She's just fantastic. She's a just unbelievable talent.
Yes.
And she's your fiancé. And
yeah, sure.
Well, you're very fortunate to have her in your life. I wish I could say the same on the other side.
I think you need to propose for someone to be a fiance, but thanks for doing it on the podcast for me. I really appreciate it.
But we were talking before we started the show, and I said, so when you guys get married, you're not going to change your last name, right? She said, no, I'm going to stick with Parisi. I said, that makes sense, because if you were a Devitt, you might have some rocks being thrown at you when you're at a lacrosse field. God. So she agreed with that. But other than that, things are good.
I don't know what part of that you made up, but I'm going to assume that most of it is something you made up.
Well, the rock pot I didn't make up.
No, that's probably true, actually. That's fine. Let's bring in our guest.
We got a great guest.
One of your guys. Why don't you introduce him?
Yeah, our guest today is Tom Sharon, head coach, Bishop Fan. Tom actually coaches in the Piattelli program. He's very involved in the youth program in Attleboro, the Titans program, which he's done a fabulous job. And every time I'm on a lacrosse field, I see Mr. Sharon, whether it's coaching the youth, high school, and developing players. So thanks for coming in, Tom, and looking forward to talking to you and your program, the school, and we're ready to go.
Well, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be invited. I listen quite a bit, and it's great to be a guest.
Yeah, are you disappointed with our banter yet or no?
No, from listening to the podcast, I kind of expected it.
You expected it, yeah. We haven't taken too many digs at each other yet. Just Jack marrying me off, which is fine. Listen, maybe you're not wrong, maybe.
Best man.
Oh, it's funny. I probably, at this point, like, my brother wouldn't have me be his best man at his wedding. I was so mad at him. So, like, it's not going to be him. You're in the running. You're top three. So I'll give you top three.
I appreciate that.
We'll consider
appreciate
it.
Appreciate that. If I was getting married, I'd have a tough time putting an invitation in the mail to you. Never mind having your wedding. I'm just kidding.
Wow.
No, of course.
When is your girlfriend coming in? When's that happening?
Probably never.
Never?
Maybe.
Jack and I have this idea that like one day we'll do an April Fool's pod and we'll just it won't be us. It'll just be our two girlfriends talking about us on the podcast.
That would be fun.
10 minutes.
Well, yeah. There's a lot of people that would listen to this, Jack, I can tell you.
Oh, yeah. Just to talk. Just to hear the stories.
Tom, my kids grew up in Wrentham and I'm from the area. I'm very familiar with the school, Bishop Fan, Catholic private school. I know you work there full time. Talk a little bit about the school and what attracts girls and boys to attend the school. What brings you to want to be a part of Bishop Fan?
So all three of my kids went there, and so we have a history. But to be honest, one of the things that I talk about when I talk about Bishop Fan is that it doesn't matter. 7 days a week, almost 365 days a year, there's kids on campus doing something. They're involved in something, whether it's a sport out on the field, the theater, singing, whatever it is. There's always kids. They're always involved. It's a decent-sized school, about 1,000 kids, but it's a small community of kids, and they're always together. And that's one of the things that I love about being there and coaching there.
So other than the athletic programs that they offer a lot of, like, what do you call them, after-school programs and music and arts and...
Yeah, they have everything from, a math and a chess club to fencing and football and, I mean, just across the board. It's something that when somebody shows up with an idea, if there's interest in it, the school is willing to invest a little bit in it to get kids involved and keep them involved.
Yeah, it's interesting with the Catholic private schools in the last 5-10 years have really grown. Their lacrosse programs have really grown, and more kids have had the interest to go to a private Catholic school because they're getting a good education, but they're also in an environment that is very competitive in terms of the athletics
Yeah, definitely. We moved up to Division One just a few years ago. This will be our third or fourth season in Division One, and we've been competitive across the board in all of our sports. As a matter of fact, our girls' basketball team won the Division One state championship just last weekend.
Wow!
Yeah, it's they provide a great education, and they expect excellence in pretty much anything that the kids do.
Yeah, we were talking earlier before we started the pod, and I was kind of trying to explain what it's like to cover Massachusetts lacrosse in the MIAA, and now there's four divisions. And imagine starting 4 years ago, right after COVID, and trying to figure everything out. And the way schools go up and down is wild. And the way that programs have to shift focus and bring in more kids and kind of push to get into the next level or just to stay even is something I'm always fascinated by. What sort of challenges have you faced in that arena?
Well, I mean, we wind up getting, there's a lot of competition for the kids that are coming into Bishop Feehan. There's other, obviously there's the public schools around the area, and there's other private schools that are looking to get these kids to come in. So, I mean, I can't provide them with anything other than a nice experience, a good opportunity. I can't give them anything.
Right.
So it's something that I get them on the campus, I introduce them to the program, we can talk, and then they have to make their decision from there.
Right. You're kind of close to the Rhode Island border. Are you bringing in a lot of Rhode Island kids as well as Mass or no?
Not a lot. There's other schools over there, LaSalle and Bishop Hendricken and some of those other private schools that are in Rhode Island. We do have a couple, but it tends to be, there's almost a line that right. The kids don't typically cross because they'll play youth lacrosse, they'll play club lacrosse in Rhode Island, and those kids will have a tendency to go to those schools.
Right. And last year, just looking at your record, you guys are 10-9 in Division One. What's your conference look like going into this year?
Our conference, we're in the Catholic Conference League. There's been some coaching changes in the league this year. So I think we have a good opportunity to make some noise in the conference this year. We've put together a very strong out-of-conference schedule this year. With Division One, if you want to compete for a state title, you have to go through the big guns in Division One, and so we've started putting them on the schedule and looking forward to getting these kids in these games and seeing how they can compete.
What does that process entail? Because I'm coming at it from a New Hampshire area where, like, we don't really do that, mostly because we're smaller and because of our budget, but also, like, there's just a ton of D3 teams that we have to play to make our schedule complete, and we still don't play everyone in our division. So What does that start with, and how does that look for you guys going into the year?
So usually in late September, October, they'll get the conference schedule together, and they'll put it out to us. And then it's up to me to basically reach out to the coaches, see what availability they have, and try to schedule a game with them. So I do a lot of work preseason to reach out to these coaches and have my calendar in front of me, and we pencil things in. I had my schedule pretty much in order in December. We've had changes. The Hockomucks moved some games around, so we've had to change some things. But for the most part, I have a pretty decent idea by Christmas time what we're going to do for the season.
Did you move a game because of an eclipse? Because we did. And I thought it was the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
That was all the talk yesterday around the school. Was
right,
the
right?
Eclipse. Yep. No, we're not going to move the game.
That's good.
We're not going to move it. We'll just have the kids not look up, I suppose.
Yeah, don't look up. Yeah.
So you're... program obviously is in better shape now than it was when you took over. And looking at the schedule, do you play every Catholic school once or twice in the conference during the year? Is that part of the schedule? You play each team twice, home and away?
We have to play each team once, and then we have the option of playing them twice if we choose to. And so we decided that based upon what our expectations are for the season, we would prefer to play a tougher schedule and look towards harder Division I opponents, because some of these schools in the CCL are not Division I. So we want to have a good opponent ranking. We want to have a good standing in the going into the tournament at the end of the season, and that was the way to do it.
Yeah, unfortunately with the MIAA, it's, you know, based on number of wins. It doesn't matter who you play against, right, who makes the tournament. It seems like there's more teams making this tournament that really deserve to make the tournament. I mean, you could...
The tournament is just massive in general, regardless of the division. So.
It's massive.
Yeah.
And so I give you a lot of credit because in order to compete in the state tournament, you have to play against good competition. And a lot of programs won't go out and play those better teams and get themselves ready for the state championship because they want the wins versus developing the program or the players and being able to compete at a higher level.
Yeah, I mean, if we're looking to be a Division I powerhouse, let's just say, or at least to compete for a Division I title, playing against teams that are not at that level isn't going to prepare us. If we go out and we play against teams that aren't going to be that good of a competition, our kids are not going to be ready when they play against the Zavarians or the CMs or St. John's Prep. I mean, those are the teams you have to go through to get to the championship. And playing teams that aren't at that caliber are just not going to prepare my boys.
What teams did you pick up this year out of conference that you didn't play last year?
The one specific one that we picked up this year was Zavarian. Last year we played CM for the first time, and we'll be playing Franklin this year for the third time in a row. And so some very, very good competition that we really are looking forward to that challenge.
So you hadn't played Zavarian before, even though aren't they in the Catholic Conference?
Yeah, this we hadn't played them. We weren't at that level.
I mean, gotcha.
we weren't ready to face off against a team like that, and we may still not be. We're gonna find that out, but we're willing to take that challenge, and we're willing to bring in the kids that can compete.
So the Catholic Conference, is there a team that's crowned the championship?
Yeah, we have the CCL. So in the CCL, there's ourselves, Archbishop Williams, Cardinal Spellman, St. Mary's of Lynn, Bishop Fenwick. So there's six teams in the conference, and there's a conference winner. They've done away with the actual conference championship tournament type of thing.
It's more like college, where you have a conference that colleges are all a part of, and not all those colleges have the same teams or the level of teams. So they kind of split everything up, and it's different from what you're thinking of, which is probably like St. John's Prep and BC High. Like, that's the Catholic League.
Yeah.
And then there's the Catholic Conference, right, where you guys are in. So it's a little different, but picking up the Catholic League is generally the teams that are in the Final Four or the championship game every year.
That's
so
true.
Even getting someone from that league that likes Variant, likes CM, definitely ups your... They do a power ranking, right?
Like, yes.
That kind of got introduced, what, 3 years ago, two
yep.
years ago?
And that's one of the things where it's no longer just wins and losses. It used to be you make the tournament if you were over 500. Now the rankings are based upon strength of opponent, and they do a strength of opponents, basically. So we'll play a team that is playing, say, in the Hockomock, and they'll be able to, they'll enhance our rating because the
strength of schedule.
Yeah, because of their strength of schedule. So it's our strength of schedule and their strength of schedule. And they changed the rule this year now to the number of goals you have to beat a team by from 10 down to 7.
Right.
So that to make it a little more competitive in those situations.
Yeah, I think that's great that they did that.
I think so too.
Because what's the difference if you win by 10 or you win by 7, right? And now teams aren't forced to run up the score much. It's very difficult to watch a game when teams are running up the score, not because they want to, because they have to.
Yeah. Right? I think one of the things I'm sorry to cut you off. I wanted to get your opinion on this. Like, this was kind of a hot button issue on Twitter last year with a certain school. It was a college thing, so it's a little different in high school. But the question was, if you're up 20-2 in the third quarter, who do you play in the fourth quarter? And my answer was always the guys that don't play. There's always guys on a team that like don't play. And like, you're not going to give up 18 goals in the quarter to a team you're already beating by 18. So why are you keeping starters in, especially, I know at college, everyone's like, oh, well, it's college, you can just do that. I disagree with that personally as well. But I know in high school, there are still teams that do that. What is your, not personal philosophy, but your overall philosophy on something like that?
I would never do that. I would never continue to run the score up. I don't think it does anybody any good.
No.
It doesn't do the opponent good any good. It doesn't do your own kids good because they develop bad habits. They start thinking that anything they do is going to work, and then you face a team that's much stronger, and that's not going to happen. It's not going to work. So, and it helps develop those kids that have been standing on the sidelines, get them in the game, start running things with them that they've been doing in practice, and now they can do against a defense.
I can tell you one thing that's worse than doing that, and it's getting starters that play different positions to go in and try and score goals, like your goalie, which happened to me when I coached in college, and I was so mad after that game. One of your coaches was an assistant on that squad. It was Waddello. And I screamed at Waddello. I was like, what are you doing? I was so mad at him.
Chris Waddello?
Yes. I was so, he knows. He remembers. Because I was cool the whole game. And then, like, he put a goalie in. And I was like, what are you doing? And he's like, ah. Like, he knew it was wrong. But, like, then he took him out. But it was, like, one of those things where I was like, hey. And he was an assistant. He probably wasn't even his call.
He didn't know. No. That, he didn't know, Back then.
I was mad.
Yeah, he wouldn't do that today.
No, I know he would.
You got to learn through example, right, and experience. Yeah. And I agree with you, Tom. I think especially at the high school level, I think it's more difficult at the college level.
Yes.
But because, especially at the Division I level, because winning is everything for these coaches now.
Yeah, it's your job.
If you don't win, you know, it's today. It's not about tomorrow. College lacrosse is, you got to win today.
Yep.
We'll worry about tomorrow. We'll worry about the other guys as we move on. Mm-hmm. But in high school, you could lose to a team 20-10 and run up the score. And the following year, you could be losing that same team 20-10 if you don't develop those other players. And I truly believe this, that you could have 8 guys on your bench that didn't see the field, right? You don't know what you have until you work with every single one of them
and
develop them the same way you would the starters.
Sure.
Because you don't know how they're going to develop. Everyone develops different time, different abilities, athleticism, and so on and so forth. So, plus, you want to build, what do you want to build?
Yeah.
Culture.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? You want these kids, if they're the fifth attackman, sixth attackman, to continue to work hard so when there is an opportunity, right, to play, they're ready to play. Right? And help the team. And it doesn't become, so many times these blowouts become stat days, right? Yeah. Oh man.
I got a good story for that.
I'm going to get my 8 goals. I'm going to stay in this quarter. I'm going to get 8 goals. I got to get that 8th goal. It's not about anybody else. And it becomes a very selfish team.
Yeah.
I will say that it actually hurt one of my players last year a little bit, because when we played some of these teams, he would go in, he would score 3, 4, 5 goals in the first quarter, and basically I would pull him out, and he did not even get consideration as the MVP last year.
Yeah.
Where if I had left him in, everyone would have known who he was, and he would have had way more goals.
I feel like that's different from offense to defense, though, right? Like,
yeah.
Don't you leave your I feel like you leave your defensive guys in, and if they want to get stat pads, as long as they're not ripping the ball, like, if they're getting their GB numbers up, I don't think anyone cares about that as much, right?
No, I don't think so either. I think you're right, though, with the goalie thing. We had this conversation a couple of years ago where the kids were like, hey, can I play X, Y, or Z position? And I was like, no, we're not.
Yeah.
We're not doing that. We're not making a mockery of what we're doing here, and we're not going to show up this other team. It's bad enough for them as it is, right? The score makes it, you know, they're walking home, or they're going back to getting on the bus knowing that score was that. And then you're going to embarrass them further by having defenders play attack, goalies play midfield. I just don't like that at all.
We have a rule for JV where if you play varsity primarily, you can't play that. If you're going to play JV, like if you're a sophomore that plays a lot or even a freshman, you really can't play that position, or you have to play somewhere else on the field if you want to play a JV game. Because JV for me and our program is reps.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not about getting goals or beating teams. There's a point where I just say, we're not shooting anymore. And if you shoot, I'm pulling you out. I don't care who you are. This is how we're going to do it, and we're going to learn where to go on offense, learn what to do on defense. But going back to the stat padding, I had 2 seniors last year that we were playing a team, and they each had a hat trick and a couple assists. And I heard them talking behind me because I run the box, and they're like, oh, I can't wait to the next one. I'm going to roast that guy. I'm going to get 4. I'm going to get 5. No, they're like arguing with each other about how many points they're getting. And I heard this, and I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, no, coach, we're just trying to get we're getting our stats up. I'm like, oh, well, you're not allowed to shoot anymore. If you go back in and you shoot, you're not playing for the rest of the game. And they're like, what am I supposed to do? I'm like, you can get as many assists as you want. you cannot shoot. We're done. You got three goals, you're done. And I think like there's a mentality of, there's a middle ground between kind of what you were saying and that, where the kids should get the stats that they earn, right? If you're handed stats, we know that you're handed that stat. They don't know that. They just see it as, oh, well, I can say I scored 50 goals when I was a senior in high school now. Like, right. They can always have it. But for us, we're just like, yeah, but like, did you deserve that? And as someone that votes in college stuff as well, that happens in college too a couple times. And I'm kind of like, well, all right, you have 60 goals. You got 8 against this team. Oh, you got 6 against this team that you beat by 20. Like, it's kind of like that kind of dissection doesn't really happen at award season for high school.
No, it doesn't. And it's almost like weighted averages at that point.
Yes. Yeah. It should be. Yeah. It's all totals.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm not in that meeting. I'm an assistant coach, but like I know about the meeting because I talk to head coaches all the time and they tell me like, yeah, we had to give them the total. So like we do it manually in the scorebook.
Right.
So it's like, it's kind of my job sometimes to add stuff up. Like, oh, he had 150. Like it's kind of, this kid had 150 ground balls. How's that possible? But like, you're talking about kind of getting the kids what they deserve. Right. And I think what's interesting about your position as the high school coach now is you have a background in coaching youth. Right. And I'm super interested in that. Cause we were talking about how that's kind of part of building culture is the younger kids look up to high school kids in a way that like, I think we as adults don't always appreciate or understand as much because it's been so long since we were kids and we did that. But it's definitely something that lends to the culture of building your program. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So I'm still the president of Titans Youth Lacrosse in Attleboro, and we've been in existence. We started the program 21 or 22 years ago. I can't remember which. And it was an opportunity for kids in the area. And at the time, there was no lacrosse anywhere around. So we used to call it Triboro Titans because it was Attleboro, South Attleboro, North Attleboro. We included Norton or anybody else that wanted to play. And we developed that first year. We had 3 teams of boys. The second year, we added a girls team. And over the course of time, we built it into a program that's been in existence now for 20 years and has been feeding Bishop Feehan, Attleboro High School. We have Norton kids now. North Attleboro has broken off and they had their own program. And it's just, we've had thousands of kids come through the program.
So what's interesting in my experience coaching with how towns work is Massachusetts is different. It's like you can't really fill everything from one town. Is that what's happening? Because from a super small town that I coach at, we can fill teams, certain age groups we can't, so we just do 13-14, right? We combine. But I feel like with Mass, like it's the more the merrier almost, and you kind of have to bring in age groups from other towns to make everything work. And it's also like town versus, is this an organization? I think that's kind of like a weird battle that's going on.
Yeah, and we're part of that Mass Youth Lacrosse program, and And years ago, it was based specifically on your town and stuff. Now, there's opportunities for kids to kind of cross over from town to town, especially if our numbers are a little low. We actually have one of our girls' team is combining with North Attleboro, one of a neighboring town's, their younger boys' team is going to combine with us. So the kids still have an opportunity to play at the different levels. But we do combine the grades. They do first and second grade, third and fourth grade, fifth and sixth. And
you don't do it by age, though?
No, they do. Yeah, yeah. They years ago they were by age, and now it's just by grade. So, yep.
And they still do under U15, U13.
They still call it that. Yeah, oh, but yeah. It's U15, but it's 7th and 8th graders.
Right, 7th and 8th graders.
Well, your kids are reclassing in 2nd grade now, so.
Yeah.
We got to make room for the kids that want to reclass, guys. That's a joke for everyone listening to reclass.
I'll never forget, one of my memories of playing high school lacrosse was, I remember the coach, after a game, we'd won by a lot of goals, and he said, all right, we're not going to talk about who scored the goals. We're not going to talk about who got the assists. What we're going to talk about, attack. He brought all the attack guys together. How many ground balls did you have? How many turnovers do you have on the ride?
Yeah.
That's the most important. How many times would the ball on your stick, mm-hmm. how many touches did you get because you picked up a ground ball or you created a turnover on the ride.
Yep.
And we didn't have much to say.
Yeah.
Right? But you play offense, you got to pick up the ground balls. You got to ride. You got to ride. And these kids, some kids just want to score and score, and it's not about scoring. Because when you go to college, if you don't ride and you can't get a ground ball, you're on the bench. That's it.
Yep.
That's it.
Well, that's one of the fun things about being part of the youth program still, is that I have that opportunity to go to the very basics, right? Scooping the ground balls up, throwing and catching, the very, very basics of things that we can teach them and then watch them grow over the years. And the kids that I have, actually all three of my assistant coaches this year are former Titans that played for me growing up, and I taught them.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I taught them how to put a stick in their hand, how to pick a ground ball up, how to throw and catch. And two of them played in college, and all of them played all the way through high school. And it was, it's a very fulfilling experience to have that come back to you later on and have these young men be part of your life still.
It's honestly why I loved coaching high school. I coached college for 12 years, and it's kind of like just this thing that happened. And I've been in this Hopkinton program. This is my fourth year, and I already see legacy. The kids are always are texting me. They're coming back. They're like, "Coach, how we looking?" I just saw a guy I coached 3 years ago. He went into the Army. Now he's an EMT, and he saw me outside the school because he was just there for his EMT stuff. And he's like, "Oh my God, Coach!" And he runs up and he shakes my hand. And he hugs me and he's like, "How we looking? How we doing? Can you get me your schedule? Like, I want to go to all these games." And you're just like, "Hey, I only coached you for a year." Like, but the way you can forge those connections, I think, maybe this happens in other sports, but I don't know. I don't remember it happening in any other sports I played. Well, lacrosse is so, I feel like there's such a good connection there if you have a really good experience.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's everything.
It's the whole base of everything we do.
One thing I wanted to mention about ground balls, going back to ground balls, it's not what I think, it's what I know. Because I experienced it like you. Mm-hmm. I started a King Philip Youth Lacrosse program. We started every drill ground balls. Every single drill, ground balls. Scoop and shoot, scoop and roll, scoop and pass. Everything was ground balls. And I used to tell the kids, if you can master the basic fundamentals of this game, you're going to be so much further ahead than everyone else. And coaches and players forget that. You have to continue to develop your stick skills at every single level. You go to a Cornell practice. What are they working on for 30 minutes? Their skills at that level. Because every single player at that level has to continue to work on their stick skills. At the next level, even more so. But ground balls is everything. And if you get a ground ball in a game, right, what do you have to do? You have to do something with it, right? You either run with it. You got to pass it. You might shoot it. But what it does is it teaches you the game. You have to react. You get a ground ball. You have to react differently than anything else. Mm-hmm. If you're open for a shot and someone passes you the ball, you know what you're going to do before you catch the ball. You got a shot.
Yeah.
Or you might catch it and you know another guy's open and you make another pass. But when you go to a ground ball, you don't know what to expect.
Right.
It's a whole new world.
What do all the coaches that we talk to that are college guys want from the players that separates great players? Field sense. Where do you get a lot of field sense?
Picking
up a ground ball, man.
Absolutely.
Going to space, knowing where you are, knowing where you are on the field,
exactly.
What space is open around you is the biggest. Like, I've seen kids that are so, and this is me doing evals, not even my kids, just watching evals of kids that are like, "Why aren't I top ranked and all this stuff? Why don't you write about me?" And I'm like, "Dude, you picked up a ground ball and ran into your own guy three times." It's great that you have four goals in this game, but how many turnovers do you have? Like, how many ground balls do you have? Just like you were saying, how many times do you chase a guy down on the ride? That's a huge thing that separates at the level of just me evaluating kids just for lacrosse, but also, and I've said this on the podcast, I know this happens for you too, and I assume it happens for you, is like college coaches, if they're interested in your kid, they're going to ask you what you think about them. Like, what do you think they need to do better? And that's one of the questions I always get. If I write an eval on a kid and I've watched him 2, 3, 4 times, I'll have a college coach be like, "Hey, I think we're looking at this guy. What do you think?" And I'll be like, "Well, you might read the things that I like on lectureal, but I have notes."
Yeah.
My notes are not always all positive on everybody, because that's kind of the game, right? Is evaluating players is a huge part of what we all do. You decide playing time. Mm-hmm. You are developing them. I'm trying to develop them as well in my smallest, tiniest 1/1000th of a way. But that's a huge part of lacrosse, is getting the field sense. The field sense is just such a key. And watching, I feel like you get it by playing, obviously, but you get it by watching.
Yeah.
Like, do you do chalk talks?
We do a lot of film outside. We monitor what the kids are watching. We have huddle, so we monitor what the kids are watching. We get how much time they're doing. We send specific things to them, specific drills, specific clips. But you're right, that field sense is the thing that separates the good players from the great ones. The opportunity to pick the ball up and move it quickly, or get out of trouble and get back into a situation where they can do something with it. Everybody can catch the ball in front of the net and try to take a shot, but it's the kid that is fighting for the ground ball, that's working to get that on the ride to try to take that ball away. That's the kid that separates himself from everybody else.
Yeah, we were talking about size before we started, and how, listen, none of us are tall at this table, let's be real. Yes, congratulations.
I bring the average up significantly.
Yes, that's
you
true.
Do, Yaz. Yeah, how tall are you, Yaz?
Almost 6'3", 6'2", yeah. And 3/4".
Yaz could wear me like a backpack.
Maybe later. Buy me a drink, huh?
We just don't know what's in that backpack.
But, man, make me lose my train of thought. Well, we're talking about players that are smaller, and like small players can play when they're freshmen and they can develop, but they have to have the ability to know when to not be that little dog going after everything that's near it. You have to kind of be smart about it. And we were talking about how we have kind of different guys that do that, and the success levels of guys that learn the game better. Like, the IQ allows a smaller player to play and execute in certain situations better than a player that, you know, is small and maybe doesn't have that know-how, right?
Yeah, we have a couple of smaller guys, and that's what separates them, is to be being able to get out of trouble, not get killed by the big guys. Because yep. You have a big body. You talked about that freshman that you had. Yep. We have big bodies that come on the field, and you're like, okay, I can work with that.
Yep.
The littler guys have to, excuse me, be a little more
creative.
Yeah, creative, a little smarter than because they need to use their bodies differently, and they need to figure out a way to get the ball, get out of trouble, put it in the back of the net if they're playing attack, and not wind up being pushed to the ground or knocked out of bounds.
One of my high school coaches, the assistant coach when I was at Kent, got the attack together. And one of the greatest quotes I've heard as a high school coach, he said, "All right, attack, game today. Do you want to watch the game or do you want to play the game?" And like, yeah, we want to play the game, but we were running like, are they going to change the lineup? You know, who's starting? He goes, well, if you want to play the game, pick up the ground balls, no unforced turnovers, mm-hmm. and ride like hell, and you'll have the ball more than the other group, the other team, and you'll get to play.
Yeah.
If you don't, you're going to be watching from the midfield line. I thought that was a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of times the attack forget that defense is part of what they do.
Absolutely.
They forget that. They take a shot or the ball hits the ground and they...
And if you create a turnover on a ride, mm-hmm. it's so much fun. You're going to have an opportunity to... good scoring opportunity, yes. Right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Let's change subjects. So talk about some of your players, some of your seniors, captains, and I wanted you to mention your assistant coaches too.
Okay. So my three assistant coaches this year is Mike Reyna, who is my defensive coordinator, who played with me through Titans, played with me at Fian, played at Emmanuel, and is back now. He's terrific. He actually coaches with me for the Piatelli team as well. So
yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah, great kid, hard worker, smart, and knows the defense inside and out. Love having him. And then I have Steven Patch, who played with me again through Titans, played with me again at Fian, did not play in college, but has come back as my offensive coordinator and does just amazing work. He does a lot of film work, does a lot of bringing in new stuff all the time, bringing in new drills, bringing in new ideas. We started going through the offense yesterday, and he's basically changing a lot of stuff from last year because we graduated 9 starters this mm-hmm. year. So we
on
are,
offense
in total, we have nine starters.
Wow, that's a big loss.
Yeah, 11 seniors, 9 starters, and so we're starting off pretty fresh. Our mantra this year is: if you want a position, it's yours to take. Go mm-hmm. get it, because it's your opportunity to go out there. We have freshmen that are going to make some impact this year, which is great. And then my third coach just came on board within the last couple of weeks. It's Kevin Patton Jr. He also played Titans. He played at Salem State, I believe he played. And good kid. He's going to do my JV. He's going to run my box for me in the varsity games.
Such a thankless job.
I just approached that with him yesterday. So
yeah, I bet he was psyched.
Well, that's so important. The box is so important, especially at the high school level, because it's chaos.
I know.
It's chaos.
You have to have a system.
You have to have a system, you have to have a person in place at the box, because kids are coming and going, and some of the kids don't know why they're coming and going, right? You gotta settle down a little bit.
Well, and you also have kids that are just, they come off the field and they're like, oh, I can get back on here right now and upset the whole, your whole substitution process. And you want them to want to be on the field, but if they've just run a long shift and then they come off, they're no good to me. I need you to rest. I need you to retool and then get back out there. Even if we run somebody who's not quite the same, at least they can hold the ball until such time as you're back into.
Right.
So some of the players you expect some big things from this year.
Yeah, so we have Mason Kennedy's one of my captains, and he played at Walpole. He was a Walpole kid growing up. He played at Walpole Youth, and a big, strong kid, was battling some injuries last year, has kind of come into his own a little bit this year, has a really good shot. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. He's a middie. We have a kid that transferred from CM, actually. He's a junior this year. His name's Cooper Masso, and just actually committed to VMI.
And looking right at it.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Yeah, yeah. And I've already told him that even though he hasn't played for me yet, I'm taking full credit for that. So. but strong, strong kid, very fast. He plays attack, and he's tricky. He can come from X and score that around the net goal or just hold it. He's got very good field awareness. He can move the ball quickly and move it well. Got a couple of, yes.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's our signal. Sorry. You caught on. You're the first guest to catch
first
on. To that.
First one to catch it.
That's our signal. Like, all right.
Once again, we're on video. That's why we have the laptops, just to hide our hand signals.
Sorry.
We're doing this.
Jack, I am half Italian, so when you do the hand signals, I'm figuring it out.
There you go. That's what I got. The first one after 200 podcasts, you figured out our signals.
That's good.
I don't think Gaz has either, though.
And I have a couple of other kids, like Danny Cody, who plays goal and plays LSM for us. Yeah, well, I mean...
Is he your starting goalie?
Well, we're not 100% sure. We have Grant Kolaski.
It's the first week.
Grant Kolaski. You have Grant Kolaski? Who's that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so...
He plays goal?
He does play goal.
Oh, my God.
Yes, you can ask him.
I didn't even know he played lacrosse.
So Grant stepped up, and he's done a great job this year. So Danny, being a smart kid, picked up a long pole and started playing some LSM. So if Grant is not playing goal, then Danny will play goal, and vice. And if Danny's playing goal, then
Grant's on the bench.
Grant's on the bench.
Taking stats.
Yeah, Grant's not taking stats. We all know that.
But that's a great to have a goalie who can play LSM as well. So that's really
well. He's a good communicator. He's smart. He knows the game pretty well, and he's very fast. He's a soccer player in the fall, so he's got good speed, and just he knows the defense from the goalie position. Yeah. So it was a nice transition. It was actually a pretty easy transition for him. So
That's great.
One of the things we were talking about before we got started was I like to know when guys come in if they're offensive guys or defensive guys, and you're like, oh, both. I'm like, come on, no one's both. Give me one, right? Like everyone leans towards something, and you kind of went a little offense. So what's your, I don't want you to give anything away, but what's your preferred kind of set?
So as we had talked about prior, we run triangles. We like to run triangles. Yes. We like to run a lot of motion. We have kids. Brendan McNeil's one of my seniors who's going to be a leader this year, and he moves the ball really well. My team is very good at throwing and catching on the run. So if we can rotate the triangles and kind of move the defense out of position, we'll be able to take advantage, hopefully get some two-on-ones on a defender. And that's kind of how we're going to run it. So not a lot of plays except maybe on inbounds plays and stuff like that. A little more innovation because we have some kids that can actually operate that way. Last year we had to run a few more plays. We didn't really have that same – we didn't allow that same innovation. This year we're going to allow a little bit more innovation.
So are you one of these coaches? Sounds like you're one of these coaches that adjust your offense based on what your talent level is and the personnel that you have instead of saying, all right, this is what we're going to run. I don't care if you can't run it, but we're going to run it.
Yeah, I think it's much easier to adapt the offense to the player than try to adapt the players to the offense. Yeah. If you're trying to run a certain set or a certain motion and your players just can't do it, it's just going to fail. And everybody's going to get frustrated that way, including the players. So we try to evaluate what we have for players and then modify our offense to what's best going to enhance their abilities.
Now, on defense, are you strictly man-to-man, or do you like to run, get into a zone every once in a while?
Yeah, we have a man in a zone package. Obviously, we're right at the very beginning, so, I mean, we're just going to start. We'll go straight up man for the most part. But Michael's very good at installing a nice zone. It was very successful last year when we were able to switch back and forth. Towards the end of the season, we had the calls where we could kind of go from man to zone and zone and back without too much trouble. We could actually do it while the ball was in play. And it upset some offenses for sure.
I'm not trying to be critical here, but I am amazed. And even like watching the NCAA basketball, a lot of teams are going to the zone and everything like that. But teams don't practice enough offense against the zone. And it shocks me that the coaches and the players don't know how to run an offense against the zone. It's amazing to me.
I mean, it's just passing, right? Like, you get the right set, you pass fast enough, you're going to get a shot. That's the thing about the zone. I do agree that a lot of coaches just run their man down with an extra guy. And you're like, I don't think that's going to work. Like, it doesn't work. I'm telling you, it doesn't work. You can have three up, three down and try to make that work. But, I mean, good luck. Where's your slide? Where's your hedge? Where's your sneak? Like, you don't know where any of those things are.
But I think, I'm sure you do it, Tom, is if I'm a coach of a high school team today, I'm having that offense run against the zone, man-to-man, zone, switch it up, so they recognize what is a zone, what's man-to-man, so on and so forth, so they know, at least they know what they're up against, because a lot of kids are out there, they don't know that they're playing against a zone.
Yeah, that's true. When they're out there on the field and they don't recognize it, yeah, all of a sudden they're looking at wait, there's no space to move, and there's no space to move the ball. And yeah, so the best thing about having Mike run the zone defense is that we can run an offense against that, and you know they're not lost when somebody goes zone against us.
I mean, teams go zone because the best reason to go zone, if zone's your primary, not that it is, you just said it's man to man, is if you have a really good goalie, and a lot of the teams you play against can't shoot.
Well,
you're going to win. But yeah. If that's the case, you will win.
But if the other team has one or two really good attackmen that can, you can't. If you have an attackman that no one can stop, man to man,
which is kind of have to.
You're gonna you double on him and you triple him. You're gonna have to, exactly. So you got to know how to play a zone, how to play against the zone. Last question for you is, what game, I know you can't look ahead, it's one game at a time and so on and so forth, but what game every year means a lot to you, the team, and the program that sort of makes your season?
Well, I mean, I think it kind of goes without saying with our team is the North Attleboro game is usually our biggest rivalry game. We have a lot of kids that are North Attleboro kids that go to Bishop Feehan that maybe played at North Attleboro Youth Lacrosse, that are playing against guys that they played with on other teams. I don't want to say animosity, but there's a lot of emotion.
Big and bragging rights?
Yeah.
In the town? They probably live in the same town.
Yep. I mean, we're literally like 3 miles from North Attleboro High School, and I have some of the North Attleboro kids that are on my Piatelli team, and so there's a lot of back and forth, a lot of talking back and forth. And it's fun, and they have Ryan Izzo over there as their coach, who's terrific.
Yeah, he is.
Very knowledgeable, very good guy, and always gets them hyped up for that game. So,
when is that game?
That will be May 22nd or 3rd. It's the last game of the season. It'll be a Thursday night under the lights.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we're at home this year.
It's your last regular season game.
It is. Our last regular season
game. I'll have to check it out.
Yep, that's the one that gets everybody going, so it'll be a lot of fun.
It's a great way to end the season.
For sure, for sure.
Yeah. Coach, pleasure having you. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. Great job. Really nice. Yeah.
Thank you.
Good luck with your season.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Good luck with your JVs.
Thank you.
How many kids are in your program?
James.
46. We have 46.
Whoa. JV and varsity?
JV and varsity, yes.
Awesome. That's great. That's great.
Yep. Awesome.
Good.
Yep. And thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piatelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. See you next time.